You're listening to the extended news at noon on WISR 680 AM and now at 107.5 FM. We are on the phone with Dr. Amesh Adalja. He is a Butler native and also an infectious disease specialist and senior scholar at Johns Hopkins University. As we're talking about the latest on the coronavirus and the pandemic, as there has been some encouraging news locally in terms of a reduction of cases and a reduction of hospitalizations. And so Dr. Adalja will take us through where we currently are with the pandemic. And so let's start with that, Dr. Adalja, as that really, especially in the northeastern region, we have seen a significant drop in cases and a significant drop in hospitalizations. What should we take away from this trend that has been happening for the last couple of weeks?
We should be optimistic about this. The Omicron surge was hard. And what's interesting about Omicron is it goes through fast cycles. It's so contagious. It has immune evasive properties. It infects so many people that it sort of runs out of people to infect. And what happens is cases start to collapse. And then a couple of weeks later, hospitalizations start to collapse. And hopefully, because Omicron infected so many people, it will leave a wake of natural immunity or hybrid immunity in those people who were vaccinated and got breakthrough infections, as well as all the population immunity we have from vaccines, so that we really are on a good trajectory when it comes to COVID-19. That doesn't mean that we won't have cases, hospitalizations, and deaths, but we may have seen, hopefully, the last of COVID-19 being able to threaten our hospital systems because we've got so much immunity in the population and so many new tools like monoclonal antibodies and antivirals that we don't see people worried about capacity the way they were in the early days of this pandemic.
So for the general public who is, for the most part, taking the general precautions that the public health officials had advised, how should we then transition our mentality here for the next coming months? Because as you said, there is a reason to be optimistic about the current state of the pandemic. So when you're talking about things like masking, things about socially distance, size or, big events where you're going to a fundraiser, or going to a concert or sporting event, how should we think now? What should our mentality be for re-engaging in the public? Basically, I don't want to say prior to 2019, but how do we re-engage with society again?
The first thing is to really come to grips with the fact that COVID-19 is always going to be here. It's going to be one of the respiratory viruses we deal with year in and year out. But because of tools like vaccines, antivirals, monoclonal antibodies, rapid tests, it's a much more manageable threat. And that threat to a fully vaccinated individual, especially if they're healthy, is very, very minimal, much like other respiratory viruses that they deal with year in and year out. So a lot of these activities are always going to have some level of COVID risk, but it's such such an easy to manage COVID risk if you're vaccinated, if you've got access to antivirals, monoclonal antibodies. But eventually what we're going to see is COVID-19 handled much like other respiratory viruses. And that's where it will come down to individual risk tolerance. Some people are going to be more risk tolerant than others. And certainly if you're somebody that's immunocompromised, maybe you had a liver transplant or you had cancer and you're on chemotherapy, you're still going to need to be careful because this is going to still be a threat to you even when you're vaccinated. But for the average healthy person, it's going to be something akin to many of the other respiratory viruses that they get year in and year out. So what we'll transition to is from kind of a centrally managed risk preferences the way the government does this to individuals deciding how much risk they want to take on. And if you're fully vaccinated, I think in general, those risks are going to be really acceptable. For someone who's immunocompromised, I think it's important that they talk to their doctors and think about a strategy, make sure they get they have access to antivirals if they get sick, make sure that they're up to date with their vaccines, that they can get certain monoclonal antibodies if they need to. But we're transitioning to that, and I think that's a good thing. That's what we want, where we wanted to go with this virus. We wanted to shift its spectrum of illness to the mild side, and that's what the tools and knowledge and that medicine has given us have allowed.
So I'm curious in the future, because obviously the CDC is still recommending a 5-day isolation period if you test positive for COVID. But meanwhile, Great Britain, while they are still suggesting it, they have essentially eliminated any type of COVID policies. If you test positive for COVID, they're saying, it's not necessary, from my understanding, not required to isolate for 5 days. Do you think we'll get to that point as a country where if you do get the sniffles or the cold again, where it has the potential to be COVID, do you think people will go through the process of just not getting tested and continuing to be out there? Or do you think the CDC will ever get to the point where they don't require an isolation period if you test positive for COVID?
Eventually, I think it will come down to a recommendation, just like it is for influenza, where they recommend that people stay home until they don't have a fever for 24 hours. So you'll probably see some kind of harmonization with flu guidance, where it's not going to be a set amount of days. It's not going to be one size fits all. And that's going to stop some transmission, but obviously there's going to be people out there with COVID-19, and that's important to know. But the thing is, as COVID-19 transitions to its endemic form, where we deal with it like many other respiratory viruses, there's sort of going to be an understood trade-off that if you're socially interacting, there's always going to be a risk that you get an upper respiratory infection. And if you're vaccinated, if we have access to antivirals and monoclonal antibodies, COVID becomes something much more manageable. Obviously, if you're somebody who's sick, you still, even if the government is telling you don't need to isolate, you should be careful about being around people because you may be contagious to them. You may want to wear a mask or meet them outdoors. And be very careful if you're meeting immunocompromised individuals or people who are at high risk for severe disease from COVID-19. But eventually, it's going to be something that is less kind of with these ironclad recommendations and more about individual risk preference and tolerance with light guidance for how you could decrease your risk of transmitting. And I think that's, again, where we wanted to get with this virus, with the tools that we've developed.
We're talking with Dr. Amesh Adalja, an infectious disease specialist. The CDC and the FDA have been kind of kicking around potential vaccinations for those younger than 4 years old, essentially the only part of the population that is not eligible to be vaccinated. What do we know about that process, and what is your interpretation as to maybe not a prediction, but what the future of vaccinations for a COVID vaccination for those younger than four will be?
When it comes to the COVID vaccines, they are safe and effective in all age groups that we've seen. What the key question is with the age group less than five is trying to figure out what the exact dose is. Because in the initial clinical trials, those that were between the ages of six months and 2 years did well with the reduced dose two-shot regimen. But people between the ages of two and five, they didn't seem to get as many antibodies as you'd want. So they went back to kind of the drawing board and decided how to optimize that dosing. So they're going to add a third dose for some of those individuals. It is true that children are spared the severe consequences of disease. However, it's also true that if you can prevent children from getting even a mild disease, that's going to be a nuisance, that's going to keep them out of school, why not do it? We vaccinate children for things like chickenpox or rotavirus that have less of an impact. And certainly there are high-risk children that would really benefit from a COVID-19 vaccination. So I think that this is something parents should take advantage of. It's going to be some time, probably in the spring is the earliest we will see this vaccine from Pfizer. The Moderna vaccine might be on a different time scale for that younger age group. But it is something I think is valuable. And even if your child isn't at risk for severe disease, your child, you can protect your child from having the disruption that COVID-19 causes with a safe and effective vaccine.
In regards to masking, here in Pennsylvania, there really has been no mask mandate other than inside of schools, which lingered until January. But for the most part, especially here in the county, you would see maybe a handful of people mask, maybe a little bit more than a handful of people masking out there. And that's really started to subside over the recent weeks and months. Where do you think we are collectively in regards to masking? Do you think that this is still the preventive measure? And I'm talking general cloth masks, not necessarily N95s. What would be your advice for people who would still like to mask, or for people thinking, when can I get rid of my mask?
Like so much with this pandemic, masking is eventually going to become an individual risk calculation. People who are high risk may want to continue to mask when they're in high risk areas, maybe when they're indoors or in crowded places. That may be a place where they use masks. For other people, they may not use masks. And I think that's, again, something that we're going to have to kind of transition to. People being okay with certain people wearing masks and certain people not wearing masks based on their own kind of tendency to either want to avoid COVID-19 at all costs or minimize their risk, and others who are more okay with that risk. When it comes to the quality of masks, they're all not equal. The best mask, obviously, is one that you actually wear. The cloth masks were recommended early on because there were real concerns about shortages for medical workers with N95s or even simple surgical masks. But now we know that not all masks provide the same protection, especially when you're dealing with more contagious variants like Delta and Omicron. So I think if you're going to wear a mask, kind of a surgical mask or one of those procedure masks that you may see people wearing at the hospital, those are probably at least the minimal that you should be doing. And for other people who desire more protection, there are N95s, KN95s, KF94s that you can find that provide a lot more filtration. But again, I don't think this is for everybody. And I think we have to be respectful that each person is going to have their own risk tolerance with COVID-19. And it's not going to be the same for everybody and for every situation, but it will likely become more of an individual risk choice.
We're talking with Dr. Amesh Adalja, infectious disease specialist. I think you and I in the past have talked about the CDC and FDA and this country's response to this pandemic. What do you think is maybe not an overall grade for the CDC, but how do you think the organization has handled being really the primary response agency for the federal government?
I actually think I wish they were the primary response agency for the federal government. What we've seen is the CDC being completely engulfed by politics, where this is mostly run out of the White House through two administrations and not allowing the CDC to actually function the way it does. In that sense, I think the CDC has been really compromised throughout this pandemic because of the way they've been used by politicians of both parties. The CDC is the premier public health agency in the country, and it would be really great if it was much more independent. And I think that they have faltered with public health communication, with not being able to provide nuance to the general public by becoming, you know, captive to political interests in two administrations. So in that sense, I'm not happy with the way the CDC has operated during this pandemic. However, I don't think it's the fault of the CDC. I think it's the fault of our elected leaders who use the CDC that way and put the CDC in that position. And maybe that's always going to be the case because the CDC, you know, is a political organization in the sense that it's within the Health and Human Services Department. The director is appointed by the HHS secretary, and so they do get they aren't immune from what's going on in Washington, but I think that compromises their ability to actually do the job that we all desperately need them to do.
Well, in the future then for public health responses, how do you envision, do you envision that there's just going to be kind of a collective approach to it where states could be doing things? I mean, that's what we saw with this pandemic, where states kind of were doing things differently than other states, despite the fact that this was a respiratory virus that didn't necessarily care about borders. So, I mean, how do you envision this country's ability to deal with public health issues in the future?
It's always been a federal system where the states take recommendations from the CDC. It's not going to be the same in every state. But what we want is states to have best practices. We want states to actually trust the data coming from public health authorities and implement it. So yes, integrated responses, even if they're done at the state level, are going to be very, very useful when you're dealing with infectious diseases that you say don't respect state borders. So what we need to really think about now is that there's this window of opportunity to get this right for public health emergencies, because everybody sees how badly this went. That when you look at the severity of the COVID-19 pandemic, you have to think about it as a failure of the federal government, the state government, the county government, the municipal governments, the school districts. All of them have kind of failed. And I think what we have to really do now is tell people how important this is so that this never happens again, that they get this right, that they understand how to take scientific data and medical data and translate that into policy that's sustainable, that's targeted, that actually accomplishes what it needs to do and has the trust of the public. That needs to be fixed. And I think we can do that if we get the government to think about this proactively and to plan ahead, because there will be more pandemics. And anytime, you know, your listeners are at a town hall or meeting with the state rep or the state senator or congressman or U.S. senator or whoever it may be, even their township supervisor, they need to think, what is your pandemic plan? Are you thinking about this so that you don't have this problem? So we have competence in government, so that our elected leaders know that this is an important thing to get right, that this is a core function of government, protecting people from being infected by other people from an infectious disease. And there have been so many reports, that some of them that I've authored, that really have fallen on deaf ears. And this is what we get, a pandemic that's way worse than it ever needed to be.
Again, we're talking with Dr. Amesh Adalja, infectious disease specialist and senior scholar at Johns Hopkins University. Again, final one for you, Dr. Adalja, maybe on a more positive note, is as we continue to see these declining cases and declining hospitalizations, Is there reason, and we kind of touched upon this at the top of this interview, but is there reason for people to be optimistic to have a relatively normal summer of 2022?
Yes, I do think the summer of 2022 is going to be relatively normal. We've got much more immunity in the population. We have antivirals. We have monoclonal antibodies. We have rapid tests. We know that that outdoor activities are extremely safe in terms of transmission. People have become much more acclimatized to COVID-19 in terms of understanding how to navigate a world with COVID-19. So I do think that summer will be fairly normal, including international travel, as we see many countries in Europe, for example, minimizing their mitigation, because I think we're in a much different place, and it's really a testament to the vaccines and the other treatments that we have available to us.
Dr. Amesh Adalja, a Butler native, infectious disease specialist, and senior scholar at Johns Hopkins University. Always appreciate your time.
Thanks for having me.
You've been listening to the Extended News at Noon. If you miss this interview, you can log on to WISR680.com.